now. Okay, so here we are in the third stage or the third process within the alchemical seven-stage process. So just to briefly recap, the first process is the purification by fire. So the first four processes all relate to the elements, because this relates to the understanding that in order to refine, in order to change, because what is alchemy? Alchemy is a process which they call solve de coagulate, is the Latin name for alchemy, which means dissolve, refine, and form anew out of the refined elements. So a very basic example is if you're alchemizing a potato in order to provide vodka, then from the potato, there's the breaking down of the potato, the refinement of the, and out of that, eventually you get the essence, which is vodka, which is a higher spirit. Interesting, they call it spirit. So that would be like a physical alchemy of an element. Here we're talking about the alchemizing of ourselves as the human, so the inner alchemy. And the alchemists of old recognized that in order to undergo, and even if you were working to alchemize products, that always the third vector in any alchemy action was the consciousness of the person who was doing the alchemy, because this always added an aspect. And so any journey of an alchemist always was both the journey of self as well as the journey with the elements. And there was the recognition that, you know, here, you know, upon the earth, there is a natural seven-stage process that alchemy goes through. And this is, again, even within esoteric studies, we learn that seven is a very interesting number within the 1 to 9, because, you know, for all of the other numbers from 1 to 9, there is a sacred geometry which is regular and perfect and, you know, has a purity to it, except for seven. There is no geometry for seven. This is because seven is a process. Seven is an expression. Seven is how you hear the earth expresses itself. So the seven physical colors of the rainbow, the seven, there are seven types to most type of forms. You know, there are seven classifications of trees, seven classifications of crystals. We see all of these crystals, and I can remember looking at this and going, how can there only be seven classifications of crystals? There seem to be so many types. But when you actually research it, the inner geometry of how crystals are constructed, there are only seven forms, and they're all variations of those. There are seven families of ants upon the earth. There are so many expressions of how the earth expresses itself through a sevenfold physicality. So any process of physicality in this world of matter takes us through a sevenfold kind of, whether we're talking about initiation or transformation or expression, seven is your number. So often why seven is very much termed like a magic number, or sometimes it's called the virgin number, because it has this ability to birth itself. So this then brings us back to within alchemy. And again, this alchemy process is something is a natural process. You can witness it in nature as much as we can use it as an analogy for our own inner transformation. So in order to transform the matter of something, you have to start with what forms the matter. Hence, we begin the journey with the elements. So the first stage we went through was called calcification, and this was purification by fire, because fire is the initiating element, and fire is what you use to break down, because of course any type of alchemy process begins with a breaking down. So, you know, if you're going to turn the potato into vodka, initially you've got to mash up the potato, the same if you're going to get oil out of lavender, initially you've got to crush up the oil. So for ourselves, we have to break the structure which holds the old form in order to be able to refine it, remove the things that are impediments or limitations in order to reform, So calcination is the first process of alchemy, which is aspect of fire. So some sort of initiating event to catalyze the change. And of course, we can experience this all kinds of ways. We can experience it physically by falling over and breaking something or getting a shock in our body where we're actually releasing energy out of our bones to we might have a shock in the emotional body or in the mental body. You know, we can actually have it through even through soul aspects and all kinds of ways of how that initial catalyzing event starts this process of change. The second one that we looked at was then the process that they call dissolution. Dissolution is purification by water. So water is like, okay, after that catalyzing event where things are kind of broken apart, what usually the power of what is released is the emotion, because that's the next thing from the physicality level. So it's kind of like almost we're working from the inside out, starting with the physicality of the breaking. The next level is an emotional body. So then out of that comes the turbulence of the emotion or the power that is released through the catalyzing event. Initially is like, okay, you've got all that potato that you've just mushed up and you've dumped it in some water in order to be able to start, you know, bubbling it up to be able to get out all the parts and start to release the densities, etc. But initially, it's just a big murky cloud of stuff. You don't have much clarity about the parts that are in it. And typically when we've had a catalyzing event and we've moved into the emotions, that whenever we are having the turbulent emotion of change or transformation, often what we experience is initially that murkiness and turbulence. So when we're in it, it's very hard to see how we're going to go forward. We're actually having to surrender and trust the process. And last time we were looking at, okay, what are the limitations? Because each stage has things that limit it or keep you in that stage longer rather than helping you move to the next stage. And like the limitations in the last stage of disillusion was the being able to not keep the emotions moving, because the teaching of last time was about energy in motion. When you're in that turbulent stage, it's like don't try and fix it. So ways of fixing it was, you know, we create a story about it and then we just keep repeating that story to ourselves over and over, and we keep ourselves in that emotion by hooking onto it in that way or creating attachment to it. The idea, the teaching of it was looking at strategies that help us move through the emotion, and that even when, as we moved through the emotion, to find what is like our window of tolerance, because you don't want to move into it to such a degree that you go into overwhelm and then you're almost traumatizing yourself because you're crashing and burning because it's just too much for you to deal with. Nor do you want to limit yourself so much that, you know, your fear of going there and being with yourself in your emotion keeps you from actually you underplay it, so you don't actually have enough. The idea is to try and work within that window of tolerance so that you're meeting emotion enough that you're getting the movement without the overplay or the underplay. So it's to keep the passage moving. And so last time we looked at strategies for what do we do when we go into overwhelm, as well as the strategies of, you know, how do we stay with the process and not let it, you know, to get the movement that we need. So that was the dissolution process. So today we're at the next stage. So this is the purification by air. And the name of this process is separation. And the idea of this is that, okay, once you've had that, so for the example, you know, the mushed potato dumped into the water, with time, gradually it'll settle out. And some aspects will dissolve into the water, and some aspects will densify and go down into the bottom of the solution. So eventually, as you process through the event and the emotion, what will start to come is clarity. And the clarity is where you start to be able to perceive the different elements that have been revealed. The different elements being that it's always, you know, this is really where the learning comes from. So once you've had the experience and you've gone through the intensity of it, which is not the time to try and pull it apart and go, okay, what's happening? normally we need to actually have moved through the intensity of the emotion and got to the other side. That's the time for the assessment. That's the time, once you've actually got through the experience, this is the useful point where then we go, okay, what was that about? What did it show me? What did it teach me? What can I see? What was triggered in me? What's underneath those triggers? You know, is there emotions that, you know, what were the dominant emotions that came up? You know, was it rejection? Was it fear? Was it lack of safety? Was it, you know, fear of lack of abundance? Was it, you know, what? So we get to reflect on the emotions that were revealed through the eruption, because in that you have some keys into what was triggered. Now, both it's both the emotion, so being able to perceive what emotion was triggered, also to look at what was the nature of the trigger, so therefore what are the mental patterns, what are the beliefs or the stories, or so which things are the mental aspects that are triggering you, that are able to push that eruption of emotion. And the third vector is, where in the body am I feeling? Because being able to actually also see quite often, particularly for where there is emotional loading, which is what usually sits underneath things that get triggered in the first place, the emotional loading often sits in different areas of our body. And sometimes when we have these triggers, there will be different areas of our body that may or may not arise in pain. You know, we might suddenly find that, I in that first stage of calcination, I fell over twice in that month, and both times, you know, crashed right down the right side of my body onto the ground, and was like going, what was that about? But it was obviously, you know, it was breaking up something that was sitting in this this physical masculine vector of my life, that had to actually be, you know, physically broken up. And some others, you know, like I know we're talking with Jenna in some of her process she'd had recently, she said, you know, where it was turning up for her, it was just like a big block of pain in the back of her neck. So it wasn't that she had damaged her neck, but the intensity of the process would bring it up in that side of the body. So this can be useful, because later on when you're actually developing strategies, which we'll get to, awareness of where in the body it's collecting. You know, sometimes it's gut. Sometimes, you know, you're constantly kicking your foot, or your right leg suddenly aches, or, you know, all that kind of, I'm sure you're aware of it. So this point of clarity, what's useful is to become like that neutral observer. So not so much looking for the story of it, but observing what happened. So observing what was the emotion, observing what were the triggers of the story, so what was the mental vector, what about the body, where did it turn up in the body? And this is all useful information, because once you have information around these areas, then as we get into developing strategies for managing and moving and refining and clarifying, you've got more information to work with.
Can I just add something about the body? Yeah. Because it's not always pain.
No.
It's also being aware of the nervous system response in the body when a trigger has been pressed. Because, I mean, typically I'll feel a lot of energy in my arms and legs, and because that's the fight, yeah, flight, freeze kind of thing. So the awareness even on what is going on in my body right now, because it's telling me something about what's going on in my psyche.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it also is useful information to collect about yourself, because sometimes when you're being triggered again in the future, what you'll get forewarning of is actually the body symptoms begin first before you maybe even have analyzed that, oh my goodness, I'm going into another event. Mm. Yeah. And so the more that you gather information, again, it's all about know thyself. And it's being interested and observant of what is in your vehicle. And so at this level, this separation level, is all about getting clarity. And the first level of clarity is observation.
I would say that the body's awareness is, you know, adding to that future events. You know, you can walk into a room and you feel it before you know it.
Yeah.
You know, you can also have something that manifests in the body as something that will ultimately lead you into something into the future which you actually need. So there is a like a foretelling that the body has, that the mind has to listen. Rather than the mind telling the body what it must do, it actually has to listen to the body, and that the body is more truthful.
That's right. Also, because, you know, your body tends to use your intuitive faculty, because the body itself is a huge receiver beyond what is simply the mind. And, you know, in a lot of esoteric schools, they teach heart first, head second. Feel it, sense it, intuit it first, and then you can bring it in and actually then work, what does that mean to me? What should I be doing? That is a second response. The first response is the reception, to receive, to gather the information. Exactly, yes. And this is, again, being observant. And so what does it do? It builds the awareness, because the journey for us all is increasing our self-awareness. The more we know about ourselves, the more we know about, you know, all the parts, that how they work and get triggered and move, then we have more ability to make change.
Mm.
Because we are able to actually perceive.
Sorry. And also, like with somatic healing, there is a feeling that you can, the body can actually feel something and know where I end or where I begin, but also what is safe and what is not, that actually can help your body, your brain, to actually go, so it gives you a evidence, which is subtle, but that's actually a requirement for the mind to actually feel a subtlety, a subtle evidence, and that then it can get more into the mind actually changing patterns. But I'm just, it could be even not just the body, but the bodies, yeah, that you can feel. But that's an extension, but that teaches the mind as well. Like,
for sure. Yeah. And we'll talk about that a bit further, but it's okay. Which is the thing which we call summary of evidence, because this is what we use to build belief. Okay. Thank you. So this is kind of the territory that we're in. So the awareness, also of the triggers, the patterns, as much, basically this stage is about collecting as much information as you can about what's happened. Because now it's kind of like in the separation is like you can start to separate the sets. This was my mental process. This was my emotional process. This is my body process. Because in the clarity that happens afterwards, once the storm of the emotion has settled, then this is the best time to perceive. Yeah. And this is the best time to learn about what happened, who I am, what do I notice? Because this is the basis upon which you then make your choices and your change. Okay, so what are the limitations? So the limitations refer to the things that slow down my passage through this part of the alchemical process. So they're kind of like the things to not to do so much if you can avoid it. So the limitations here is the fallback into pattern, stroke, story, that stop you from investigating it. The other one of that is externalization. Which we might consider the blame game. So how these two limit us. So the first one of the fallback into characterizing what happened, and particularly because by nature, this is where we're talking about past life experiences again. By nature, when something happens, if a similar thing has happened before our nature is to go, it's because of that, because that's happened before, and this always happens, and every time this happens, I feel this way. And so we end up losing the ability to perceive it in a clear way, because our view is clouded by the story we attach to it.
Yeah. And you also go into a loop, yes, which separates you from knowledge. You
correct.
Know?
Yeah. And the other part of this is externalization. Externalization keeps us from responsibility. And so externalization, again, is where we give over the power for what happened to things outside of us. So it was because that person did it, or this event happened, or that thing, or that's why I'm feeling this way. And why it affects our responsibility is it's very much about our ability to respond. Because if we give the power of it to outside of ourselves, what effectively we are doing is disempowering ourselves to actually create change for what happened. Because if we have no power in the face of what happened to change how we feel, then we have no ability to respond in a different way, because we're going, well, I can't help it, because when that happens, this is how I feel. Yeah. So we negate our ability to respond. The more that, you know, we understand that life is co-creative, absolutely. And of course, yes, there are things that happen. And yes, it's not saying that that doesn't affect me. But the power that we have is how I am affected. That is the power that we all have. That is our response ability, how we choose to respond to that event. That's the thing that we can change. Where we give away that power and we go, I am unable to do anything in the face of this event, then we negate our ability to respond. So we actually give away our power, in effect. So these two things are the main limiters in this stage of separation, because they stop us being able to get inside the event, because we've clouded it with the old story, and so we haven't been able to get to see the clarity of the truth of what is. And the second one, we have disempowered ourselves from being able to affect it next time. So the next one then is, all right, what are the actions that are desirable in this stage that help us move through this stage of alchemy? So the first one is to face the truth of ourselves. So again, it's the clarity to perceive ourselves clearly. To be able to perceive the elements at play. So a bit like we talked about before, to be able to go, okay, what was the physical, what was the emotional, what was the mental, you know, break it down. What are the elements at play? The next one is then to assess. So assessment's different to judgment. Judgment typically holds within it more emotion, and has more, this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. Assessment is more of, this was useful, this was not. So it has a more neutral vector to it. Assessment is the tool of being able to look at something without attachment. So it's a more neutral observer view, yeah? So to be able to assess, you know, just those kind of things, to take it through an assessment ongoing. So it's like, what is the truth of that moment? So apart from the stories I created, you know, a bit like Jenna was saying, that, you know, an event happened, it took her into, you know, things that had happened in the past, worry about what she might do in the future. But when she came into going, what actually is the truth of it in this moment? You know, what is the now point? You know, so assessment is good to bring it back to the now. So what is the truth of this moment? Because sometimes what we're creating is actually in our mind. Yeah. So there's the truth through the now. Then it's looking at the process of, okay, what's useful out of that, what's not useful. So in what happened, in how I responded, you know, it's not always to look, you know, what you did wrong, but it's also to look for those elements where you were okay and going, actually, when I did this, this was a good bit, you know, I held that bit, that was good. So it's good to both recognize what you already have and what you're doing okay at, you know, it's give yourself a, yep, I've got that, as well as looking at, okay, which things were less useful, you know, what could I have done differently, or which things did not serve the, you know, prolonged that process unnecessarily. So it's good to, again, look at the less, not judgmentally, but more looking at what's useful and what's not useful. And then to do the assessment of, okay, what needs to change? All right, so they're kind of like the actions and the, it then takes us into the next step. You know, once we go, what needs to change, we then start looking at the next step, which is then strategies. So these are the strategies for change, of which, of course, there are myriad and many. As much as we are individual, there are so many things that we can do. It's finding what works for you in that moment, and typically, you know, often it's attracting them in. But in looking at your strategies for change, one good aspect is to actually divide them up into what we call before, during, and after. Because when you're looking at strategies for change, you can have some strategies which are what I'd call preventative. So these are things like the being able to, you know, create a, you know, maybe it's something like morning practice, or you know, some kind of, you know, Esther Hicks, you know, often has this thing of reach for the best thought possible when you start your day, because it sets a field of vibration that you can work from. Within heart math, you know, it's about, you know, doing a breathing to start your day from a field of heart coherence, because then you've got a better baseline with which to meet things, so you're not so activated by things that happen. So these are like the strategies that you apply before you get to the moment of where you're triggered. They could also include particularly where you've identified emotional vectors where they have loading. They could include planned for release in a safe way of some of those emotional vectors that you know are there. You know, if you've got a big thing that when it's, you get triggered, it just brings a rage of anger out, or, you know, and it's like, okay, somewhere in me there sits this, so can I find other ways of accessing it? So, you know, you might use processes of you know, breath work, you might use, you know, static dance, you might use different types of meditation that allow you to touch those places and release. And we can certainly share ideas of, you know, many kind of things. So your before strategies are looking at your preventative strategies, so how to establish more or regulate your baseline, and also your inner work, or your shadow work, as I would say, to be able to defuse the loaded vector of emotion that is the thing that erupts when that triggering happens, yeah? So they're kind of the things that happened before. Your during are the strategies that you put into play for how you're going to manage when you have another episode. So again, if you have put some thought into pre-thinking other things you could do, you're more likely to be able to use one of them than trying to think of it in the moment, because in the moment's got you. And so these can be things like, okay, instead of using my anger to destroy something or somebody, can I, when I feel this, redirect it into something less destructive? You know, the old classic of, yeah, go out and chop wood with it instead. You know, some redirect the energy of the emotion into something less destructive. And so again, planning for it or having ideas about what you might do if you have, when you've recognized your trigger. You know, for some people that may have this trigger of something happens and they feel not safe, you know, it's a very common one. Then again, it might be, all right, in that moment, how do I comfort myself to, and Jenna was sharing in one of the other circles about the process of self-kindness that she was going through. I'm going, okay, when she gets this turbulent feeling of being unsafe, is to be able to
put your hand on your heart and just tell yourself that you're just in a moment of suffering, so acknowledge, and then also acknowledge that you're not alone in it, and then start the mantra of, may I be kind to myself, may I be compassionate, I'm love, I'm safe, you know, whatever words that work for you. And then just keep doing that until you feel like you've come to a bit more manageable spot.
Yeah. Other during practices, you know, if you're quick enough in that you are feeling the symptoms of going into the triggering, but it hasn't quite got you there yet. You know, Esther Hicks talks about this in her book about the vortex. And she's going, this is the point where, again, you can be effective, either just when it's starting or once it's actually passed, basically. She said, once you're in it, it's got you. But she said, okay, in that moment when you're getting it, she said, okay, you can breathe. You know, take a moment to just breathe deeply. And this gives you a little bit of thinking space to actually think of what else I can do. So it can sometimes win you some extra moments before you go down the rabbit hole. Distraction. Can you reach for something to distract yourself? You know, sometimes having what I call, you know, emergency music on your phone. Music or sound is a great way of changing your state quickly. And you might have particular pieces of music on your phone, which is your rescue music. When it's happening, you can put that on and put your earphones in and just go, okay, just breathe with this and just let this music just fill me for a moment, you know, if it's possible. You know, as I said, distraction, again, go somewhere different, change the action, read a book, watch a movie, if you can. You have a window of distraction before you go down the vortex.
Two other things. Yeah. Thank you, but no thank you. It's a really simple one.
Great, yeah.
And to wiggle the toes. So you actually are in the body. And to really feel the toes.
Great.
It's like, yeah, it's two things that just take you out of, to thank, acknowledge whatever it is, but no thank you. Yeah, and you know, wiggling the toes, or just you in the body. And once in the body, it actually breaks you out of a loop. Yeah.
Fabulous, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for being very, very rude.
Oh, sorry. All good. We're glad that you could drop in.
Sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Janice. Oh, Stacey, you'll get that. See you next time. So again, in the during, again, it's looking at what strategies can I use to minimize the damage or the destruction, or to reduce the intensity of the outplay, because again, you're wanting to care for yourself and those around you. And so again, pre-thinking them is the best strategy, so that you've got something to go to in that moment and going, okay, yes, I'm going to try this.
Smudging can really help.
Yeah.
And also just putting my hands on the water, or especially my face with water.
Yeah.
Just getting some water, or if you have the time to jump in the shower or have a bath.
Yeah. Mm. Aromatherapy can be another thing, because the smell and emotions are very closely related. And so sometimes it's to have, again, like your personal rescue remedy thing that you can use to just trigger, again, a change in your state is what you're trying to do, to reclaim your consciousness, so that you're bringing yourself back into an awareness that's not sending you down the triggered state. Yeah. So your strategies for during, you know, ideally you're aiming to try and minimize the time you're in that triggered point, and you're trying to minimize the damage. or the trauma of that triggered point to yourself and others.
They're also important to use regularly anyway, because, you know, it's all well and good to have a plan, but unless you actually are familiar with working that plan, when it comes to the moment,
yes,
it's less likely to be used.
Absolutely. And as they say, practice it on the small things,
yeah,
because then when you need it for the big things, you've got it there more as an automatic system. That's a really good point. And then the after strategies. The after strategies, again, are how do you nurture yourself afterwards? So again, this is how do you come back into a more regulated state again? So how to transition yourself back into a point where you can actually then start to work with the clarity to be able to perceive the learning. Because, of course, once you're in it, this is not the time to try and work it all out. Because when you're in it, you're in it. And you just try and manage yourself and care for yourself as you're going through it. So that's really like the emotion stage, the dissolution stage. When you've got to the end of it and the emotion has to the most extent passed, then you're in this stage, and then you're looking at what strategies help you move into this stage. So what are the strategies that help you clear the emotional state that can bring back and nurture the self to re-energize and care for the self, and allow you then to go into the process of where you can then start going, okay, what did it show me? You know, what was this experience about? You know, what can I perceive within that? These kind of things. This is when you then start your questioning.
Well, poetry, I find writing, and then sort of like tuning into my muse. So I have another aspect which is teaching me, but it's opening that channel.
It is. Expression is the key. And so any of the expressions, whether it be writing, painting, drawing, speaking, singing, playing music, anything that allows you to process energy out, because of course, what does this do? But it helps to flush out the emotional residue. And it can also allow clarity to arise, because as you flush away the residue, then the clarity opens and then you are able to have a better perception. Also in that after, this is a really good point of being able to refine, particularly if you've tried a new strategy and you've put something in place, it's a really good time to then assess, okay, how did that go? Did I find it more useful? Did it work for me in some way? Should I tweak it this is where, because what we're trying to do is move through a path of refinement where each time we meet it, we go, okay, all right, I tried it this way. Maybe I could add this, or I could talk to someone about it and just see if they can give me more other ideas about how I could refine that a little better. You know, you don't always have to be the source of everything in yourself. Always good to chat with others and get more ideas. Also, always remember the law of asking, that when you're not sure and you want more information, just in yourself, go, help, bring me what I need to see in this. You know, if I can't perceive it, I just send out that little beacon inside myself ongoing, help me to have clarity about this. Bring to me the information I need that I may not be perceiving. And it'll arrive, you know. It can be anything. A book will fall open. You know, someone will say something on a radio. You'll meet a person in the street and they'll be talking about something. You know, it comes in multiple ways. You know, it could even be a messenger friend of an animal that will come to you. A feather falls at your feet. You know, there are a multiplicity of amazing ways that the universe tries to talk to you when you're open to hearing it.
This is Angel Guide Kai Gray, and you mentioned in the YouTube video to say thank you, angels, for showing me the truth that I need to see. And that's been such a powerful process for me when I started using that.
Absolutely.
And it can appear like 2 days later and suddenly like something that I've never thought of.
There is so much power in asking. It's actually one of the universal laws. Ask and you shall receive. We have to, and because of law of free will, which is another universal law, that it gives us, it offers us the respect to be sovereign and to work it out for ourselves, which of course we can. But if you then choose to invoke assistance from your guides, teachers, angels, the universe, in whatever way it wants to talk to you, then you can make the request and it will respond. Because, again, it's a universal law. It's then being able to be open and receptive to be able to see how it's talking to you. Okay. Yeah, so in that after stage, yes, regulation, self-care and nurture, and refinement of strategy are kind of the three steps in the after. Other things in the before, one other thing there that I hadn't mentioned was also the use of repetition and affirmation as a way of being able to pre-program yourself for particular responses, as the use of mantras or personal mantras and things like that, to mostly to be able to keep your awareness on what it is that you're looking for. So that, and these work very well, I find, like for a moon cycle. Typically, you need to change them after that because the mind then stops perceiving it so well. It becomes more of a habitual thing than something it's able to hold. So you're better off changing it in some way or moving on to, it could be a similar thing, but do it in a different way. So that you can keep the mind, which it loves patterns, but it gets bored. And once it's got a pattern, there comes a point where it stops really thinking about it. And so you need to realize that this is the aspect of the mind. And typically a moon cycle is pretty well, it'll do fine for about that period, but yeah, to change it after that into something else to again, just, and that you can then come back to it again, you know, in another cycle, but it's just to work with how your body works, to be able to, use those affirmative patterns, you know, to focus on not only, mostly the focus is on the positive things that you're wanting to put in. So the positive messages, the changing of beliefs, these kind of things need to happen in that before. So they're kind of like your proactive strategies.
Can I add something about urine?
Yes, please.
It's just something that just dropped into my racing thoughts recently as I was getting stuck in the, oh, what if this happens, what if that happens, and oh my god, you know, like, then there was just this dropping in, and what if, and it was like the absolute opposite of it, and so I'm, finding that even during, because when having a reaction, my mind, probably many people's minds, start to go into those patterns, I'm finding that that helps me to, I guess it's like a redirection too that helps to kind of slow down the steam train.
Yeah, and again, you're moving the energy of it into a more positive generating than a negative, in terms of how it's impacting on your emotions. Because the more, obviously, we dig our hole, it brings up lots of less useful emotions. Whereas if we can spend that same energy on generating a positive, it's really the classic reframe of the story in some ways.
But the question, what is right with this that I'm not getting? That's a cool...
That's a good question. So it's just finding those tricks that help to shift us into a more positive frame, and to look for, the gift in the challenge. Has anyone else got particularly strategies, things that you use currently that you might like to, other than what we've talked about, anything in there that you would like to share or anything about this process that you would like to?
Just.